Thank you. Welcome, everyone. Good morning and afternoon. So welcome to our Query Complementary and Integrative Health Evaluation Center CHEC Cyber Seminar. And very excited for today's discussion around what number of sessions of yoga and meditation are associated with improved health. And you might notice that I am not Dr. Diana Burgess. She is typically the hostess extraordinaire for this call. I'm Allison Whitehead, Program Lead for the Integrative Health Coordinating Center in the Office of Patient-Centered Care and Cultural Transformation. I often do attend these calls as a panelist at the end to provide some comments, but really excited to host today. So I am going to introduce our speakers and then turn it over to them. So first of all, Dr. Stephanie Taylor, many of you probably know and have heard from in the past, was trained as a sociomedical scientist, health services researcher, and NIH-trained implementation scientist. Dr. Taylor is a VA research career scientist and UCLA adjunct professor at the Departments of General Internal Medicine and Health Policy and Management. Dr. Taylor's research over the past decade has focused on examining the effectiveness and implementation of non-pharmacologic approaches to prevent or manage pain, anxiety, and depression, and foster whole health. She serves as executive director for VA's National Complementary and Integrative Health Evaluation Center, which oversees multiple large-scale quality improvement projects in partnership with VA's Office of Patient-Centered Care and Cultural Transformation. She has over 30 years research experience at VA, UCLA, Rand, and Columbia University, has authored over 150 peer-reviewed papers and reports, and received over $17 million in research funding from governmental and foundation sources. So joining Dr. Taylor today is Dr. Stephen Frochin. Stephen is a health services researcher and statistician based at the Greater Los Angeles HSR COIN. He specializes in aging, long-term care, disaster management, and complementary and integrative health therapies. As a statistician, he contributes to studies involving large-scale veteran cohorts and applies a variety of methods such as non-randomized observational studies, generalized linear modeling, and non-parametric spline regression. So very excited to have both of these distinguished presenters with us today. So Dr. Taylor, over to you.
Thank you, Allison. I so appreciate that illustrious lead-in. So everyone, thank you for joining today. Stefan and I are really excited to share some hot off the press, but it's actually hot off the computer results. And what we're going to show you are draft results. We're still fiddling around with some minor things, but we're too excited. So today, as Allison noted, we're going to be covering the number of sessions of yoga and meditation that are associated with improved health. And there you see our paper co-authors. Let me advance the slide. There we go. So this has been a huge effort involving a lot of people. First, we should acknowledge from the Office of Patient-Centered Care and Cultural Transformation, not only Allison Whitehead herself, but a whole bunch of people who funded this effort and oversaw and provided a lot of input into this. We also got funding for this effort from Query for our center. And then here is the long list of people who were involved over years in designing the survey, executing the survey, pulling data from the VA medical records, and analyzing the survey data. So it's a huge cast of amazing people that have been behind the scenes working furiously for years. So let me give you just a little bit of background. Most of you on the call know that yoga and mindfulness-based interventions can improve chronic pain, anxiety, sleep, depression, and other things. But really, the field hasn't really coalesced around the optimal number of sessions that are needed for some health outcomes. We found this out, unfortunately, years ago with one of our studies. We had to consult with national experts around the nation to learn what were the optimal number of sessions. And everybody said, well, we kind of don't know. We have an idea, but we don't really know. So we took it upon ourselves to really dig in deep into that question. We found that most studies of yoga or meditation interventions use obviously a preset number of sessions to examine the effectiveness of them. Usually use 8 at a minimum, sometimes 10, sometimes 6. But few have really examined how varying number of sessions of yoga or meditation really do affect different health outcomes. So today, what we are going to be reviewing are the results from two papers that we're leaning, one on yoga and one on meditation. It uses a very large sample of veterans who use those therapies. And obviously, as I said, we are looking at the number of sessions of yoga or meditation that it takes to have an effect over 3 months or over 6 months. And the sample that we used were veterans with chronic musculoskeletal pain who had not used integrative health therapies before. So a little about the methods. So the population, we sampled the population from the VA medical records. We invited over 15,000 veterans from 18 whole health flagship sites who had moderate to severe chronic musculoskeletal pain, who had just started any of these six therapies. And after we sampled them, we got their names, then we gave them the survey, and we also pulled information from the medical records on them. So for the survey, it's what I just mentioned, OPCCT, so the Office of Patient Centered Care and Cultural Transformations, Complementary and Integrative Health Patient Therapy Experience Survey, it's a mouthful. It was conducted over 2 years, and it's the largest survey of its kind on patient use of integrative health therapies and their self-reported outcomes. At baseline, the response rate was 24% of the 15,000 invited, and at 6 months, the survey response rate was 58%. I'm not gonna get into the survey a lot. It's a lot of details. If you want more information on the survey, there's the citation of the paper that was published a few months ago. So that's one source of data that we examined. The second source is, so of those veterans that were surveyed, we dug into the VA EMR and pulled information on their integrative health therapy use and their characteristics, because I think everybody on the call knows that the VA gives a lot of integrative health therapies. So we wanted to capture all integrative health therapy use for yoga and meditation, not just what they reported on the survey, but what they also were using at the VA and the community. So I'll get into that here. How did the survey define integrative health therapies? So the survey asked about yoga, using yoga for 15 minutes or more, either by using it on an app or taking an online or in-person class or doing it on your own after some training. And the survey specifically said, we're not asking just about stretching or breath work. We're asking only about yoga. The survey asked about meditation or mindfulness or mantra for 15 minutes or more, either by using an app, taking an online or in-person class, or doing it on your own after some training. And then the survey also asked about the number of classes or sessions, doing it on your own after some training, doing it in person with a community provider, in person with a VA provider, at home guided by a VA provider, at home guided by a community provider, and then on your own using recording, video, or app. So we were trying to capture the universe of what they were using. We didn't leave something out. Next slide, there we go. So obviously when you're trying to examine how effective something is, you wanna have a baseline measure, a baseline survey, and a follow-up measure after they've used some things. And you wanna get the people before they've used a lot, right? You wanna really have them use no integrative health therapies. So how did we determine new user? Well, we pulled names that we gave the surveys to from the EMR based on people who had no integrative health therapy use over the past 6 months, except they were just starting. They had just started, they had one session or so, so we wanted to watch them after they used more and see what happened. We also confirmed in the survey, asking them how many sessions they had used in the past week. If they used more than one, we dropped them. We also dropped people who reported in the survey that they were consistent meditation, yoga, or Tai Chi users. People who said that they consistently, by consistent means they said they consistently used two or more times a week, or they consistently used yoga or meditation about one times a week for 15 minutes or more for the past 6 months. So again, we are just trying to take out people who had been using, because we're trying to look at the effectiveness of this. So the survey, so what were the outcomes of the survey assessed? Here are most of the survey outcomes, not all. The survey looked at pain intensity and interference using the BPI, overall mental health, physical health, and fatigue using the PROMIS 10 survey, feeling depressed using the PHQ-2 screener, stress using the perceived stress scale, and having purpose in life, having meaning in life using the life engagement test scale. Analysis, so Stefan was the king of the analysis. He used a restricted cubic spline or a natural spline regression. He used linear estimators for continuous outcomes, multinomial estimators for categorical outcomes. And then we controlled for a lot of covariates. We put in the models the number of sessions that people had used at baseline of other other therapies. We also examined their demographics, any other pain treatment they were getting, any their health comorbidity, you know, how ill were they, and any other mental health utilization, because oftentimes when you're using mental health care, that can help with your anxiety, depression. And finally, before we jump into the results, we want to show you that not a lot of veterans were using a lot of yoga or a lot of meditation. Roughly a quarter we're using 10 sessions or more over 3 months. That's a session a week or less. That's not a lot. That's about the minimum. Okay, a quarter. Same with meditation. So we didn't have huge numbers to play with. In spite of all that, we have some stunning numbers, some stunning results. So I wanted to put forth this limitation here that it's not like a lot of veterans are using a lot of things. I highlighted there the number of people who really are using a lot of sessions of yoga and a lot of meditation. And you can see it's not that many, okay? So here are the results. So what we're gonna do is first present, I'm gonna walk you through the yoga results. This is a summary slide, and then we're gonna show you real quickly some of the really pretty figures that Stefan produced. I'm going to walk you through the yoga, and then I'm going to turn it over to Stefan for the meditation. So green means good, red means bad. So the way to read these results is during the 3 months, having at least 19 sessions of yoga affected positively the pain severity, went down, the severity of their pain. A veteran who used 14 or more sessions of yoga over 3 months had improved physical health at the end of that for 3 months. 16 or more sessions improved their mental health. 18 or more sessions improved their feeling of having purpose in life. Skipping down to the next screen, having 20 or more sessions affected those people who felt depressed every day. And the same with fatigue, using just even starting with one session, it helped people who felt fatigue every day. So that's a lot of very positive associations. Now, again, we should make clear that this is not causality. Using yoga did not cause these things. Using yoga was associated with a likelihood of improved health conditions. So I just want to be clear about that. We are following people over time, though, so the findings are pretty interesting. Now, I'll talk briefly about the red and the yellow. We don't know what's going on with the red. We are still digging more into the data, more deeply into the data. But basically, this is saying that for people who were using 13 or more sessions, there was a bunch who were more likely to feel depressed several or half the days. And similarly with fatigue, for the 15 sessions or more, this positively associated with feeling more fatigued. Now, what's interesting is if you look at that second column under the 6 months, those weird results went away. It's almost uniformly positive effects or no effects. So with using this number of sessions of yoga and all of these outcomes. Now, I want to mention that 81 where it's got a yellow. That yellow means proceed with caution. Basically, it's saying if you used 81 sessions or more of yoga over a 6-month period, you were less likely to feel depressed every day. Now, as I showed you in that previous slide, very, very few people used 81 sessions or more of yoga over 6 months. So we are not interpreting these results, right? You get to the ends of the analysis and things get a little wonky and wobbly. So I'm just going to blow through some of the slides that show you what the curves over time, the more sessions you do over time, has to do with the likelihood of your health changing. So here's for pain interference. As you move from 0 sessions of yoga all the way through to 60 and 90 sessions of yoga, you can see that there was no relationship to pain interference. Using yoga did not have any association or effect on pain interfering with your life less. However, when we looked at it over the 6 month period, as I just mentioned, when you use 5 or more sessions, from 5 to 62 sessions of yoga over 6 months, it did have an effect. It did improve pain interfering with your life. Pain interfered less. Okay, so that's how we read these slides. Is the dark gray area shows you where using yoga is associated with the outcome that we're examining, and the green means good. Okay, so this is saying it had a positive effect. I'm just going to walk through real quickly. This is the number of visits it takes for yoga to affect the severity of your pain: 19 to 20 sessions over 3 months, 17 to 41 over 6 months, affecting your global physical health. You can see that large band, it really had a lot of effect. Many sessions had an effect. Same with global mental health. Same with perceived stress. Having purpose in life. Now, these last two slides are the wonky slides that I was talking to you about, where we're digging in deeper, more to understand. But you can see the results are different depending on the kind of depression you had. Was several days or every day. Okay, and that's that weird 81 visits or more that really nobody used, or very few people used. Fatigue, same thing. We're digging into the results. We don't know really what's going on with that, with people who had moderate fatigue. Okay. There we go. I'm going to pass it over to Stefan to talk about meditation.
Thanks, Stephanie. Hi, everyone. Once again, my name is Stefan Froschen, and I'm the analyst on this project, the one who fitted and graphed the predictions of the restricted cubic spline models, and I'll be covering the results for the meditation analyses next. If you have a fairly good memory, you might recognize that there are many fewer associations for meditation across these outcomes compared to yoga. The number of meditation sessions isn't associated at all with pain severity or physical health at 3 or 6 months, and is related somewhat counterintuitively or in an unexpected way with pain interference, and only at 3 months, beginning at 10 sessions, showing an increase in pain interference at this threshold. The number of meditation sessions is associated with an increase in mental health, but only at 6 months, beginning at 15 visits. It's associated with a decrease in perceived stress at both 3 and 6 months, beginning at 1 and 32 sessions, respectively. It's also associated with purpose in life, but only at 6 months, starting at 1 session. And now, looking at the multinomial outcomes at 3 months, the number of sessions was associated with an increase in the probability of patients reporting depression several or half of the days, beginning at 1 visit, and a decrease in the probability of veterans reporting depression nearly every day at 33 visits. And it's not associated with a change in patients reporting depression at 6 months. Finally, at 3 months, meditation is associated with a decrease in both moderate and severe fatigue, but only at 3 months, beginning at 21 and 56 sessions, respectively. As Stephanie said on this last point, for the association beginning at 50 some odd sessions, comparisons such as this one were predicted at the higher end of the exposure distribution, where the trend is it fitted pretty sparsely. This part of the curve, as you'll see in future slides, and as you saw in Stephanie's slides, represents a few patients who use a lot of meditation and are also very likely quite different from more typical users of this therapy, patients that are centered around the bulk of the session count distribution. So any interpretation of these more extreme associations should be done with caution. Next. So as I said in the previous slide, meditation use is not associated with physical health at either 3 or 6 months. Next. It is associated with mental health, but only at 6 months, at 15 to 49 visits, where we can see an increase in this outcome, mental health. It's associated with perceived stress at both 3 and 6 months, between 1 and 6 sessions at 3 months, and beginning at 32 at 6 months, both showing a decrease in stress. Next. In terms of purpose in life, the number of sessions was associated with a change in purpose in life at 6 months only, but in both directions, oddly, with a decrease in purpose in life beginning at 1 visit and then an increase at 21 sessions. And we can talk more about that later. Next. For depression at 3 months, the number of sessions was associated with an increase in the probability of patients feeling depressed several or half of the days per week at 1 visit, and a decrease in the probability of patients reporting depression every day at 33 sessions. And it was not associated. You're right, Stephanie. It was,
sorry,
it was not,
Stephanie.
That's okay. the number of on the next slide, Stephanie, the number of meditation sessions was not associated with a change in depression at 6 months. Next, for fatigue at 3 months, the number of sessions was associated with a decrease in the probability of moderate fatigue at 21 visits, and a decrease in the probability of patients reporting severe fatigue beginning at 50 sessions. And as shown on the next slide, the number of visits was not associated with a change in patients reporting fatigue during this time frame. Next. Then looking at pain severity, the number of sessions was not associated with a change in its outcome at either time point. Next. And as I mentioned at the outset, it was only associated with pain interference at 3 months and positively, meaning more sessions led to more pain interference at 10 sessions, which is not the direction hoped for in this outcome, obviously. Next. So to begin the next few slides here, we just wanted to present some of the more salient limitations of these analyses. The first of these is that this is a non-experimental study, which can only demonstrate the conditional and expected mean values for continuous outcomes and probabilities for categorical outcomes across increasing numbers of sessions as predicted by the fitted values. It's an exposure response regression curve, which cannot demonstrate an incremental treatment effect or causal effect. Second, because of varying levels of non-response at 3 and 6 months in the survey, there may be some sort of systematic bias associated with those who did and didn't respond that could potentially affect the estimates, as well as the precision of the coefficients and graph predictions. And then third, there appear to be relatively low levels of yoga and meditation use across both time periods as reported in the survey and as recorded in the EHR for the sample. Back to you, Stephanie.
Sure. So I'm just going to wrap up the results for yoga and meditation, and then that will be that. So to summarize, for yoga, in general, and these are just loose takeaway points, they're not hyper precise, but in general, having as little as 14 or 19 sessions over 3 months was associated with improvements in pain severity, physical health, mental health. That pattern was similar over 6 months, but using yoga was now also associated with improvements in stress and pain interfering with life. However, as we've noted many times, the pattern is odd. for fatigue and depression using yoga was associated with improvements only for those with daily fatigue or daily feelings of depression. It had the opposite effect for those feeling fatigue or depressed half the days at 3 months. And similarly for meditation, having as little as one session over 3 months or 28 sessions over 6 months was associated with improvements in stress. And having 13 sessions over 6 months was associated with improvements in mental health. But having 9 sessions over 3 months was associated with pain interfering with life more, which is not good and odd. And just as with yoga, this pattern is odd for depression. Meditation showed improvements only for those with daily depression and had the opposite effect for those feeling depressed half the days. So this is what we're digging into further before we write up these results and publish them. I think that's it. Stefan and I went through this in record time, leaving plenty of time for questions. There are our emails if you've got questions for us after this session is over.
Great. Thank you both so much. A lot of information, I'm sure, for many people to process. So thank you for that. And we will just, provide, as we do at the end of the presentation before going into Q&A, a few moments of commentary. So I am joined here by Dr. Janet Clark. She is the senior physician lead over whole health education, the Integrative Health Coordinating Center, also over health and wellness coaching and faculty development. So wears many, many hats and is well-versed in yoga, meditation, and research as well. So Janet, over to you to make a few sort of tying in comments to the work that we're doing nationally, and then I will help to moderate the Q&A. Oh, and we can't hear you, Janet.
All right, maybe better now.
Yes.
So, Allison, thank you, Stephanie and Stephen. Yeah, this is really so appreciated. And one of the, some of the information that we've really been hoping to better understand is really dosing. And so I think it's really helpful and interesting, even with the low end that you were noting, to be starting to get a feel, especially specifically for a veteran population, what dose or application of yoga or meditation would be likely to be supportive and of which symptoms. Because there's actually quite a bit of data out on this, but I think having data that's specific to the veteran population is really helpful. There are so many caveats and variables to be considered in terms of the length of a class or, what kind of intervention it was. If it was a very short, video application of yoga, if the yoga was trauma informed. There's just, I think, so much to unpack here. But it's exciting to begin to get an idea about dose. We really do see that veterans who have chronic pain especially, and I think all of the intersectionality that occurs with having multiple chronic medical conditions, including a comorbid mental health condition, mechanisms that we can make a shift often look like a recipe. And so meaning that it's very important for us to bring in the first line applications and all of the interventions that we find in clinical practice guidelines. But we also find when we're seeking to provide whole person care, for example, that trying to get somebody more activated or develop self-agency within their chronic symptoms really means that incorporating something like yoga or meditation as part of the individual and unique recipe for that own individual's path to healing and recovery is so important to the work. And so that's why I think this is gonna serve us as we move forward there.
Thanks, Janet.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Clark. All right, so I'm going over to our Q&A here, and I'm hoping that the team can help me in case if I miss anything. I'm going to go through them in the order that I see them here. So first question is about the survey itself. Can you summarize what is quote unquote known or guessed about the veterans who responded to the survey compared to those who did not respond?
That is a great question, because clearly we know that if a lot of veterans didn't respond, we've got some biases going on. We did do some analysis early on. I think we presented it in the paper that I cited that compared the people who responded with the non-responders. And I think in general, they're similar. That's the overall summary, because I didn't do my homework to get refreshed on that point. Stefan, do you by any chance happen to recall?
We were planning to do some kind of analysis after years that looked at differences between those who did and didn't, but we just pushed ahead with the analyses.
No, we actually have that. We presented it in the paper. I just don't recall what it is, in the first survey paper. But yeah, in general, I remember they were pretty similar. It was a glaring difference between people who completed and didn't complete.
Thank you. Okay. Next question here. How did you define yoga? There's a vast difference between the Eastern world and Western world definition of yoga. And most commonly in the Western world, it is boiled down to the physical or asana part of yoga. Did you ask or look into any other aspects of yoga other than yoga or meditation?
Great question. So Allison and several others in the Office of Patient Centered Care worked hard with us to define yoga and meditation. And we reviewed the survey definitions of yoga and meditation early on in this presentation. So shall I flip back to that? Do we have a lot of questions, or do you think we can get to that? I'll just go real quickly. It was very brief. We could not get into the nuances.
Yeah, and I think if I recall, it's pretty broad. And there's a question actually a little bit later on, I think, in the questions about this. It's pretty broad in terms of the definition and the use of it. Also, could include the delivery, could also include use of an app, taking it online or in person, doing it on your own. So it's sort of broad, but we might get a little bit more into the answer to that in one of the following questions. But yeah, anything else you wanted to share here?
Stop. Yeah, so I went to the slide. Can everybody see that? This
yes,
is how the survey defined it. And Allison, you brought up a really good point. I mean, this isn't a randomized controlled trial of a very defined intervention where we can tell you exactly what it was and wasn't. This is a heterogeneous group of interventions, right? All kinds of yoga, chair yoga's in here, yoga classes versus doing yoga on your own at home, meditation classes. So meditation classes given via the VA versus the community. So there is no uniformity. And that's both a strength and a weakness, right? The weakness is that we can't point to something and say, well, this type of yoga worked better than that type of yoga. But what we can say is across the board, we have some general patterns that are really, really compelling. And it sort of speaks to the generalizability. It says, regardless of the type, right? Regardless of the type of yoga, regardless of the type of meditation, this is in general what you could expect to see for this type of population. Great question. Thank you for posing it.
Yeah, thank you for the question asker, and thanks for your response. So and you may have touched on most of this, but I just want to make sure to ask this as well, because it's a little bit different.
Sure.
So how were you able to determine the impact of yoga when the category included, as we were just discussing, use of apps online was both, was online both in and out of VA, and sessions could be 15 minutes or they could be more. So anything else you'd want to share about that?
No, not really, but I'm glad the question was asked.
Looking through here. Okay, thank you for this great presentation. How did you define a change in key outcomes, for example, PBI interference? Why did you choose a restricted cubic spline approach, and what other methods did you consider?
Stefan, do you want to respond to that question about why did we choose that approach?
Yeah, so the distribution of the exposure at the high end of the distribution is really sparsely fitted. And if we were to fit an unrestricted cubic spline across the entire distribution, it's dangerous to do that through through portions of the exposure that have such sparsely fitted data. So instead, we opted for the natural spline or the restricted spline that limited linear constraints or linear associations or trends beyond the internal knots of the splines as we specified them.
So Stefan,
that makes sense.
That was your very smart PhD that does a lot of fancy analysis. For people on the call who aren't analysts, can you just say in English what you just said? I think it was something like this, that you use the particular type of spline that you use because so few people used high amounts that it was an odd distribution. Is that in general what you're saying?
Yeah, it's a count distribution with not a lot of observations at the tail end. And to try to fit a curvilinear trend through that is dangerous, statistically speaking. And so we limited the far end of the distribution to linear trends. And that's defined as a natural spline. That's why we chose that model.
Meaning very few people had used high amounts. That's why you fit that. Was there any other type of, I remember that we considered other types of analysis at the very beginning a year ago. Do you recall why we didn't use those, sort of just to educate people on that process? Or
we began with a categorical exposure at first, but we found that the cell sizes were so small. And so consulting with our statisticians, we opted for, you know, an analysis that allowed us to look at the incremental change.
That's right.
Yeah.
So that's right.
We went with a continuous spline model.
That's right. So for those people, let me take another stab at it using simpler non-analytic terms. At first, we really thought about examining the effects of 8 or more sessions because a lot of interventions use 8 or more and break it down into different categories. What are the effects of using 1 to 7 sessions, 8 to maybe 15 and 15 or more? And we really thought that that was not the best way because we wanted to see exactly where the shift was going to be is when yoga or meditation started to get effective. Was it at 14 sessions? Was it at 22 sessions? We didn't want to use pre-existing categories. I hope that answers the question that somebody posed. It was a very, very complicated process that required multiple statisticians to wrestle with before we landed on this. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Looking through questions, just trying to see which ones we've not already gotten to yet. Okay. How are relationships able to be made between self-reported outcomes and number of sessions with variables like length of session, kinds of meditation and yoga, delivery of both meditation and yoga?
We didn't look at length of session, and we didn't look at types of meditation and types of yoga or the delivery, the different types of delivery. This particular question, the research question we were examining, was how many sessions. As you can see, or based on what Stefan and I reviewed with you, it was hard enough to figure out in general, over all types of meditation, over all types of yoga, what were the effects, how many sessions mattered. Because, right, and so few people, if we had 5,000 veterans all using yoga, then we could really dig down into the different types of yoga session, the different lengths of yoga, but we didn't. We really only had 25% of the respondents were using 8 or more, so, or 10 or more sessions. So we just didn't have a large enough sample size of people using things to examine the nuances like that. That would have been fantastic if we could have done that. I wish we could have.
Yeah, and so this might be another thing that was not able to be done, but I want to ask it because it's here. Do we know who delivered the yoga or meditation, or if it was a part of clinical care sessions or well-being?
So again, same, I'm glad somebody asked this, same answer. We do know the survey recorded it. I mean, they responded in the survey if they did it at the VA, if they did it in the community, if they did it on their own, if they used an app. So the survey did record it. They reported it. We did not examine that. We did not have enough people responding saying that they use these things.
Okay.
Yeah, it's too bad.
Yeah. All right. Another one here. So these results seem a little confusing. Did you drill down on differences in the participants to look for responders versus non-responders? Seems like there might be some factors there. I know you did talk a little bit about differences, but anything else you'd like to add to that?
Sure. Let me just reiterate. Definitely, we're confused by the results too. That's what we're continuing to dig down. But again, the differences, so the results presented here are only the responders. When we did the initial examination last year of the people who responded and didn't respond, in general, they were very similar. Any differences between the responders and non-responders don't explain the oddities we have in the results, unfortunately. Something else is going on.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, another question here. Based on this association data, particularly the unexpected finding of more depression with more yoga sessions, any suggestions for pre-screening veterans for depression and offering handoff for offer of treatment if depression found before ongoing yoga? So I'm thinking that might be before or after starting yoga.
Yeah, I was afraid somebody was going to ask this question. Thanks, Michael. Yeah, I hesitate to make any policy suggestions based on this quite yet, right? Our next steps is that we're going to dig down more deeply and work with Allison and Janet and their full team to figure out what recommendations can be made so that the field can use these results. Sorry, I can't be more helpful.
Thank you. Okay, and this another question coming in. This is a great question to be thinking about. Do you think there's any harm in conducting this research and the findings, specifically negative associations with the origins of yoga and cultural appropriation in the Eastern world? And if so, how does your team address these?
I'm not understanding the question really, Stefan. Maybe you are, or maybe you are, Allison. I understand the negative associations, but the origins of yoga and the cultural appropriation part, I don't understand what's being asked.
Yeah, and I'm not sure exactly. And I'll say some of, you know, what we are doing. And I'm not part of this research team, but just in terms of what we're doing in the Office of Patient Centered Care and Cultural Transformation. So I think it is really critical anytime that we are thinking about talking about working with these approaches. And if you think about complementary and integrative health approaches across the board, you know, yoga, of course, but certainly all of the other approaches that we're offering in VA, they do, you know, come from different cultures and traditions. And so it is, you know, really critical for us to always be acknowledging the roots of these practices and thinking about that, you know, whether it's research, training, et cetera. For example, in our, we do have a 200-hour yoga teacher training in VA, and we do have a big focus within that training around all components of yoga. So not just asana, but really all the different limbs of yoga, including, you know, kind of woven throughout discussions around cultural appreciation versus appropriation and different things that we could be doing there. So I do think it's a great question, you know, for all researchers out there as well, listening in and thinking about research that you might be conducting, papers you might be writing up on these different practices that do come from different traditions, different cultures. It's really important to acknowledge that. So I don't know if that answered the question specifically. And, you know, I'll also put my email into the chat so that folks have that. I'm always happy to talk more and to, you know, receive feedback and to always try to do better in what we're doing. So thank you for bringing that important topic up.
Thank you for responding, Allison. That was way better than anything I could have offered. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. Okay. And I feel like my questions here are jumping around a little bit. So I am trying to get to them as I see them. So I'm coming on to this next one. Did yoga or meditation help in the rehabilitation process? Other disciplines, OT, PT, ST, I'm not sure what ST is, et cetera. So I think that's occupational therapy, physical therapy.
Speech therapy.
speech therapy, maybe? Okay.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. We don't know. We haven't examined specifically what happens when somebody's using yoga and other therapies combined. We don't know. We do know because we pulled the data from the EMR on what other things they're using, but we haven't specifically gone down deep into this particular aspect of the combination of therapies that people may be using, yoga and something else, PT, speech therapy. We don't know if these people were in where they were in their rehab process. We don't. This is a very large scale view of what is effective, the number of sessions that are effective. Beyond that, you know, the details of the person, the details of the yoga, the details of the meditation, we can't really parse out too much. Sorry.
Yeah, thank you, Stephanie. Okay. Let's see. I thought we maybe had replied to this one, but I don't see it as being answered in the queue. So let me just ask it again, or for the first time. Thank you for this great presentation. How did you find a change in key outcomes, for example, PBI interference? Okay, let me just remark that as answered verbally. Okay. All right. Do you have any information about the respondent's intent for using yoga and meditation? An explicit therapeutic or pain relief intent would set up different expectation than goals of relaxation or lowering stress, for example.
No, unfortunately, that was not in the survey. That was not asked. That would have been a great thing to ask, but I think the survey was so long as it was, that was not asked.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So another one related to definitions. So it's great that you still have this slide up. This one about meditation. So what is the operational definition used with meditation as intervention and as oversimplification? Was quote unquote meditation experienced more like relaxation, distraction, or more like mindfulness, i.e. paying attention in a sustained way, present moment, non-judgment?
Right. So that is a great question. And that last bit there is the way that mindfulness is defined. But again, we defined broadly when we worked with Allison and Janet and the rest of the team to define these things. It was intentionally decided to define them broadly to capture all kinds: meditation, MBSR, mantram, right? Normally you don't see those three examined together. So broad strokes, not a deep dive.
Yeah, and I'll put in for those of you, I know we sometimes have a mix of in VA and non-VA folks, but for those who are in VA, I can share in the chat in a little bit the link to our Integrative Health Coordinating Center SharePoint, which has some of the definitions that we use for different CIH approaches for the purposes of the Integrative Health Coordinating Center work. Of course, researchers may define things somewhat differently. I think a lot of times we'll have that in, somewhere in, for example, when a manuscript comes out about this, I'd imagine you might include some of things like definitions might be included. Okay, let me go back to Q&A. Open the chat, which was not the right thing to do because then it blocked other things. Okay. So this one is not related to this presentation specifically, but more broadly about CIH research. I'm wondering if the VA has conducted any research into the efficacy of clinical hypnosis as complementary and integrative health or medicine approach. I can say, and Stephanie, then of course, if you want to speak to anything that you've done in this area, I can say there has been, one of the evidence maps, the evidence synthesis program maps that included clinical hypnosis along with guided imagery and biofeedback in one of their maps a few years ago. And so, we can make sure folks see that. But Stephanie, anything that you and your team, has done specifically with clinical hypnosis you'd like to share?
Yeah, we didn't do a study of clinical hypnosis, but I want to make sure everybody understands or is aware of the resources that are available on the website that Allison mentioned, the OPCCT website of resources for researchers. One of those resources is something that CHEC we continue to do, is compile all the research that has been conducted on veterans on these therapies so that you can specifically look at the abstracts and pull the papers yourself. So the registry, it's called a research registry, and it's organized by type of therapy. So you can go down and look for the hypnosis studies. Similarly, there's an older research library that lists all the papers on integrative health therapies and veterans. So you could drill down and look at the hypnosis papers. That's not up to date. I think it's a couple of years old, but it's not terrible. Do we have more questions coming in?
I'm looking there. Let's see. I'm just looking at our queue. Okay, here's another one. I'm not sure that the study looked at this, but it's always a great question. Meditation is one of the limbs of yoga. So why yoga or meditation? Did the meditation group not practice other limbs of yoga, such as the yogic poses or asana or the yogic breathing practices?
Great question. Again, we were really trying to be very pragmatic in producing something that can inform policy, something about yoga and something about meditation. We know that the two have significant overlap. We did not look at other kinds of meditation and other kinds of yoga. Sorry.
So you mean the other limbs of yoga, you mean, right?
The other limbs of yoga, right. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Let's see, another one that I'm seeing here, were you able to look at the data for those who did the practice at VA or through VA / community or by time that there was?
Yeah, so great question. We've got a couple of people examining the differences in effectiveness by VA delivered care and community delivered care. And I think one of those papers has been published and one's about to be published. So we didn't examine that, but our colleagues at CHIC did. It's a great question.
All right. And then this next one, and I think it's the last one that I am seeing. There's been a lot of great engagement
by
the audience. So appreciated. What are the dangers, if any, of reducing the effectiveness of mindfulness to number of sessions versus type mindfulness versus MBSR? So kind of gets to the, you know, splitting of types and dosing. So thoughts on that?
No, absolutely. Again, there are a million lenses that one can use when doing research. And our particular lens, because we are funded by the center that Allison works for, the Office of Patient-Centered Care and Cultural Transformation, to do research specifically that can help inform their policy. So with our lens, it's always very practical things that can be used to guide the field. So things like reducing things to the number of sessions. Other studies have examined different types of mindfulness and meditation and MBSR. We aren't doing that, right? We can't do everything in one study because, as I mentioned before, we are so limited by the sample size. Now, that said, this is the largest sample size of people using integrative health therapies and patient-reported outcomes. So even this survey, it really has some limitations. It's very tough to be able to answer all the questions that we all want the answers to.
Great. Thank you so much, both Stefan and Stephanie, for being here and presenting today. Those are all the questions I can see. Maria, did I miss any? Thank you for helping me kind of mark those that were answered.
Yeah. The only thing I have here is what's next, or what would you have done differently?
Oh my gosh. What's next? Well, we continue to look at as many nuances as this amazing audience suggested. This is exactly the kind of things that we're still going to be digging down to see to help try to figure out for the explanations for the weird effects. Differences where we can, when we have the power, the sample size to look at differences. We have a large team examining many different aspects of this data. We have at least 15 papers underway. So over the next year, you will see the work that we've just been working on for the past year, and you'll see more papers coming forward. There are too many to mention, but I really appreciate the interest.
This is very exciting. So I want to thank you, Stephanie and Stefan, for taking the time to prepare and present for today. And I want to thank the audience for joining for today's HSR Cyber Seminar. This session does receive credit. So if you're interested in receiving credit for attending complimentary and integrative health sessions, please check out our webpage. I did put some information in the chat. You do need to sign into TMS and to WebEx before the session in order to receive the credit. When I close the meeting, you'll be prompted with a survey form. Please take a few moments to fill that out. We really do count and appreciate your feedback. Have a great day, everyone, and we'll see you next month.
Thanks for calling in.
Oh, bye.
Bye.